Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned. Om Shri Sai Ram. Loving pranams at the lotus feet of our Supreme Lord Sai, the voice, the ears, the heart and soul of Radio Sai. Sai Ram and good morning dear listeners. My name is Karuna and I'm coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is the 13th of March 2014 and the time right now at the Prashanthi Digital Studios is 9:41 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time, of course, and is just about 11 minutes past the morning aarti. It is also the time of the day when longing hearts are inching towards the holiest of shrines on the face of this planet. That happens to be the Mahasamadhi of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. On behalf of all our listeners, I bow to the divine energy emanating from that supremely sacred spot. Dear sisters and brothers, please accept my apologies for being away from Thursday Live last week. I'd like to thank Brother Raghu for filling in for me while I was away. Let me now update you on the current weather conditions here at your and my true home, that is Prashanthi Nilayam. Largely clear skies, occasional cloud cover, crisp breeze, pleasant evenings, nights and mornings. Overall, it is an unseasonably comfortable mid-March. And this past week, we had a few short spurts of unexpected showers as well, and those definitely helped. Daytime temperatures are hovering in the 33 to 34 degrees Celsius range, and overnight lows continue to be breezy, 22 Celsius, which is way cooler than expected for this time of the year. Now, the annual exam fever has gripped the student community in Prashanthi Nilayam's Vidyagiri campus, which is home to a large number of Sai schools and colleges. The annual exam time is at its peak right now, and one can see Swami's precious students praying extra hard at the Mahasamadhi and bowing extra diligently to Lord Ganesha on their way back to their respective hostels after darshan in the evening. I'm sure they'd all love to fast forward time to reach the end of the exams. This year, incidentally, most students will be heading out home on April the 1st. Those writing their CBSE board exams for grade 10 and 12 will leave earlier, of course, as they follow the national schedule, examination schedule. Dear listeners, coming up today on Morning Glory is yet another gripping and riveting part of our ongoing in-house Fleeting Moments Lasting Memories interview with my colleague, Brother KVSK Ganesh. Around the office, KVSK Ganesh is lovingly known as Kawasaki Ganesh, and this ninja has some lovely divine interactions, interviews and insights to share with all of us. But up first, it's time for Tryst with Divinity. These, as you know, are a series of conversations with Baba's devotees from around the globe. And today, I'm very pleased to play for you the final part of a three-part conversation with Dr. Ravi Shankar Pauli Setty. Here he is in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Bishu Prushti of Radio Sai. And dear listeners, since I'm new to my RJing, just give me a second to get this right.
I had a lot of fractures, I had a lot of bruises and I had breathing problems, but it was Baba, Baba, Baba every day. With every breath, with every step I would take while running, it would be Om Shri Sai Ram.
Well, it actually all started with my mother getting a vision of Swami. This was in 1970 when she was cooking.
There were lots of roses and of course tiny little rosebuds which was nowhere ready to bloom. And he just touched it with his finger. Mm-hmm. And just like a movie or a video, mm-hmm. right in front of my eyes, you know, this rosebud started to get bigger and bigger and bigger and opened out into a beautiful rose.
Love All, Serve All, we've made as famous as Swami has at the Hard Rock, because we put it on millions and millions of t-shirts, jackets, buttons, badges, everything. If you got your check, if you work for me at the top, Love All, Serve All, we put huge signs up in every restaurant around the world.
Trust with Divinity is our weekly series in which we bring you conversations with devotees of Bhagwan Baba from around the globe. You can listen to this on Asia Stream of Radio Sai every Thursday at 9:50 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Trust with Divinity, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website radiosai.org, or you can also download and listen to any interview of your choice in this series at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/trist, that is radiosai.org/TRYST or trist. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
So Charaka mentions that because integrating the data that you generate from 24 trillion reactions is literally impossible. It's literally impossible. He says that you have to identify the common attributes of these reactions. And then he says there are just 18 attributes.
Mm-hmm.
And these 18 attributes are further classified into Vata, Pitta and Kapha. That's the beauty of Ayurveda.
Oh.
It's not that they didn't know all these things. They knew all these things. Mm. How do I know? Because you look at the stupa that is built in the Ajmer.
Mm.
That stupa, which was built 2700 years ago, the Greeks, they write in their book. The Mohammedans, they write in their book called Maktab-e Islamia. They try to break that stupa, it seems. But nothing could break it. The metallurgy of that stupa was so complex that they found, how did Indians come up with this? With such a great stupa that could not be shattered or broken by anyone. So many invasions happened and no one could break that stupa. So for me, when I read the scriptures with this perspective, because all the 7 million chemicals, they knew 6,000 years ago, we're not finding something new. We have actually downgraded ourselves.
Yes.
According to me.
Yes.
And then India was a place of advanced civilization and advanced technologies were there.
The only difference when you look at it now is the rishis went inside and got all this information.
No, they did both. They did both actually. They went inside and then modeled outside.
Okay.
Because you have all the vimanas. See, if you look at the Vaimanika Prakaranam, that's a part of the Adharavana Veda. That deals with entirely the aircrafts and the NLOs, the UFOs.
Yeah.
These are all mentioned that there is a Tripura Vimana. There are 27 different types of aircraft, including single passenger aircrafts.
Yes.
If you look at the way Mahabharata war, the vest that Arjuna wore was approximately 1,000 kilos. The vest. It mentions Vastra, but no one looks further beyond.
Yeah.
The Vastra weighs about 1,000 kilos, it seems. Which means he was wearing not a simple Vastra. This Vastra would wear not more than 1 kilo.
So, but as you mentioned, the Vastra will have 81 meanings.
That's true. That's why one of the meanings of Vastra is that one, Va is not, which is not, Stra is Sa, Ta, Ra, becomes Stra. So, that which is not either Sattvic or Tamasic or Rajasic, which is beyond, is Vastra. So, it's amazing. When you know Sanskrit, then how do I base it? I'm not a fanatic Indologist or something like that. I have base to talk about this because the Vastra is made, according to Vedavyasa, is made of 16 metals. Mm. That's what he mentions. He mentions that there are 16 metals, of which we know 9. We could decode 9. The rest of the 7 we don't know, because one of the metal in the Vastra that was worn by Arjuna to defeat a certain Asura, I forgot, Lord Krishna says, you kill this Asura, then only we'll be able to win this war. In that war, Arjuna then wears that vest and he goes chasing this and he goes to all the Atala, Vitala, Sutala, Talatala, Rasatala, Patala, and then all these Patala Lokas he goes.
Yeah.
Arjuna chases him all the way and then he goes to the divine worlds also. It's in Bhurbhuva, Suva, Mahajana, Tapa, Satyaloka. Apart from the Satyaloka, every Loka he goes, Arjuna chases and then he finally catches hold of him and then pushes him beneath into the Patala. And then kills him there. With this Vastra. So how did Arjuna travel all these? According to me, that's a kind of spacecraft that Arjuna was inside. So that which is beyond the sattvic, rajasic, tamasic. So that was beyond space. See, he traveled at the speed of the mind with this vastra.
When you look at it, I mean, they were far, far, far more advanced.
They're very advanced. Than India is not, we're not talking about some primitive civilization. I don't buy this concept at all. Very, very advanced civilization. Highly sophisticated, highly scientific. But the thing is, you know, the message for me from Ramayana or the Mahabharata is that, you know, however advanced you are, the moment, you know, dharma goes down, correct, everything goes down.
Yes.
And for the sake of dharma, you have to forsake everything. That's what Lord Krishna, yes, demonstrated. And yes, then that's what Swami also continuously knows. That's my message. That's what I learned from this.
Yes.
But then why I have touched this subject is because when you look at the archaeological remnants, the excavations that were done, but there are 3,000 places in India and Pakistan where these archaeological excavations done. I don't know, somehow everyone forbids us to go there, but then when you read the material that is already published in the form of papers, scientific papers, you know, the site looks as if a sudden nuclear catastrophe occurred.
Mm-hmm.
If, say, for example, if a sudden nuclear catastrophe occurs here, we all will suddenly disappear. Only the skeletons will remain. The skeletons that remain will have a lot of radioactivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. So that's exactly what they found. They found that these skeletons are radiating a lot of radioactive material. There are a lot of alpha, beta, gamma radiation going on even now. And then these skeletons are in various postures, you know, sitting postures, standing postures, lying postures, which means the effect was very, very sudden. That is, yes, a sudden, some catastrophe. And because the skeletons are radiating beta and gamma radiation, it must be a nuclear catastrophe occurred. So everything correlates to what is mentioned in Mahabharata. In the Kurukshetra war, you know, this is what happened. There were Brahmastras and all, yes, this, Ashupatastras. They're all, I mean, nuclear material. We just have one atom nuclear fusion reaction, but there were so many then. So they had to, you know, do that to protect dharma. They had to forego all the science and technology. And then Mahabharata specifically mentioned when the 18th chapter, right after the Svargarohana, after 20 years, Vedavyasa mentions that people used to be born with mutations. He doesn't mention mutations, but he mentions that there was loss of hair for people. People started losing nails, hair, all side effects of some nuclear catastrophe that occurred.
Mm-hmm. It's mentioned.
It's mentioned in the Mahabharata. It's not, I mean, you can just open this and then I can cite that. I didn't specifically buy heart those verses because for me it was just academic and then I got my answers. So, connecting all these dots, what I make out is that it was an advanced scientifically, spiritually, technology that we had.
So, and what we have perhaps unraveled of the past is very,
very less. Very less. Because maybe 2500 years ago when we were under the guidance of Chanakya, under the protection of Chandragupta Maurya, we were pretty well. Actually, they were trying to bring out all these technologies. That's why we had the Nalandas and Takshashilas,
yes,
the greatest universities in the world had, and then people from everywhere, Pythagoras, they all, yes, came here to learn these things.
Correct.
That's what we know. I mean, otherwise, you know, Nalanda, there's an observatory in Nalanda even now.
Yes.
Yeah. So, okay, to cut the whole story short, yeah, I mean, I'm totally, earlier it was just a belief that India was very advanced. I have a 200% conviction that it is. Because of the work that I did in the field of Ayurveda, I'll come to that work. That's very interesting, actually.
Yeah.
How Swami guided me at every point.
Yeah.
So, with this background of what I understand about the ancient India, what I understand about that glory has to be brought back to India. I mean, it's not my job.
I know. Sir, somebody to participate in the restoration of the Veda.
Sure.
Vedic culture.
Yeah, yeah. Vedic culture, Vedic tradition. What I thought, you know, okay, now the problem here is that the way Ayurveda is understood itself is wrong. Not total, okay. It's not wrong totally. Mm-hmm. It's infinitely small. It's just 1/81st part of what could be in its entirety. So then I realized, okay, now let me get back to these concepts I thought. You know, what is Vata? What is Pitta and what is Kapha? So what is Vata? So Vata is something which is Sheetala, Rukshana, they said by the Rishis mentioned Rukshana. Chalatva, it is Laghu. So Sheetala is cold. Then I'm thinking, okay, if they knew all these chemicals are present in the body, and then they were still trying to understand at an attribute level. They were, like, not understanding at a... See, when you try to understand the body, I'll tell you, what are the levels of understanding? The genetic level, the microarray level, organelle level, the cellular level, the tissue level, the organ level, the organ system level, the human, yes, as a whole level.
Yeah.
So what the rishis were trying to put, you see, what we're trying to go, we're trying to go deeper and deeper and deeper. We are going to go nowhere. Because when at the microarray level, there are more things that we need to know that we don't know. We would never know those things. Because Swami mentioned many times that in modern science, you open one door, you'll find 1,000 doors shut. So you keep opening those 1,000 doors and then you'll find another 1,000. So it'll be 1,000,000 doors at the next level. So that's not the way. So what our rishis did was, they just came up and then tried to understand at an attribute level. This is the first understanding that came to me, that they were trying to understand at an attribute level. So which means, Shitala. So when they were referring to Vata, possibly were they referring, I thought, to a biological environment which is cold. Shitala is cold. A biological environment could be cold only in one case. When, at a level of understanding biochemistry, if in that environment endothermic reactions take place, then the system becomes cold automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So, according to me, I thought, the original translations for myself in my own mind. So, Vata is a system, Vata is a biological environment in which predominantly endothermic reactions take place. So, that's why the system is Shitala, cold.
System cools down.
Cools down. The resultant of these endothermic reactions leads to formation of products that are cyclic aromatic compounds. And aromatic cyclic compounds are volatile in nature. So, if something is volatile, it just evaporates, which means the system becomes light. Laghu is another property of Vata.
Mm-hmm.
Then, when something evaporates from the system, you keep the bottle open for some time. You come and touch this bottle from outside. It'll be slightly colder. You measure the temperature. It'll be slightly colder. Because whenever evaporation takes place from any surface, the system further cools down. Yeah. According
some
to zeroth
heat also escapes.
Escapes, yeah. Zeroth law of thermodynamics. Mm. And then it cools down, but another thing that happens at a chemical level is that the water molecules inside get imbibed. So, which means there are less water molecules now available within the systems. So, that's why the system becomes dry.
Okay.
Rukshana property of Vata.
Okay.
So, when you understand Ayurveda at this level, yes, it is amazing science. Because you're literally decoding what the rishis are saying.
Yes.
And it makes amazing science. You're connecting Ayurveda with the modern science.
Yes.
Because according to me, modern science is, on a scale of 10, it is at a 1.5 level. That's all.
Because
that's all
most of the time, I don't know if I'm even competent to say, but most of the time what you see is you're all the time looking at the symptoms. You're only trying to
see
all the symptoms and you're never going. In very rare cases, you're actually going to the roots.
I'll tell you, from the, you don't have to be, you know, so diplomatically correct. I can tell you straight away from the WHO site.
Yes.
WHO proclaims, I mean, straight away mentions that it's only 15% of the diseases that are cured.
Yes.
Another 85% of, actually we are not doctors, we are just managers. Because that's what we do with the patient, we just manage the patient.
You look at all the symptoms and you look at the book and just give the medicines.
No, not even that. I mean, the best part of the modern science is they're very honest.
Yeah.
The modern scientists are very honest. They literally mention, you open a Harrison's Principle of Internal Medicine, you'll literally find that they mention not cure of a certain disease, they mention management of this disease.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only managing. You know, the choice of words is so pretty clear. They make sure that the message is well communicated. This is a message. We're not managing. So that's what WHO mentions on its website. 85% of the diseases are just managed. Okay, from the 85%, we have some clues about 40% of chronic diseases. So which means acute diseases are getting converted into, we are able to help the patient to get this disease from its acute state to a chronic state. That's all we are doing. Another 40% of the disease, we don't even have any clue. That's what the modern science says. So we're not doing anything literally. 15% is literally nothing. So from their own viewpoint, it's just 1.5 on a scale of 10. Ayurveda is at a scale of 10. On a scale of 10, it is at 10. Because I'll tell you how, why it is on a scale of 10. So for me, I thought, you cannot say, for example, until and unless Anton von Leeuwenhoek invented a microscope, the Westerners did not know, even the Indians,
only some class of people
knew that there was something called krimis.
Mm-hmm.
The Westerners didn't know that there were microbes. It was then that they started looking at this, oh, there are microbes here. They are not visible by the naked eye. Mm-hmm. You need some tools for that.
Yes.
So until and unless these tools are developed for Ayurveda, you'll not be able to see the Vata, Pitta and Kapha things. So I said, okay, I'll work on these tools. And then I'll try to communicate this knowledge on a scale of 1.5 only.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, I have understood that. I mean, Vata Pitta Kapha at a biochemical level, I understood. Now I have to create these models, demonstrate it. I need to show them. It should be evidence-based, right? I cannot just say, I mean, these are my concepts. I mean, it should not be hypothetical. It should not be just theoretical as well. So what I realized is you need to create models of Vata Pitta Kapha. That's what I did. What I did was, again, from the Ayurveda mentions there are three kinds of humor. I mean, they should not be translated as humors at all. They are all biological environments, three kinds of environments. And then the plants, the food products are all classified according to Vata Pitta Kapha again. So that was, I mean,
even the food products.
The food products are classified. So that was easy for me. So what I did was, I took various groups of rats. I took five groups of rats, in each about 15 rats. Vistus strain rats, and then each of the rat was fed with Vata enhancing diet. The group 1 is fed with Vata enhancing, and the group 2 Pitta enhancing, the group 3 Kapha enhancing diet. Then group 4 and group 5 are control group of rats that are fed with normal balanced diet. And then they were fed for 4 weeks. After 4 weeks we had to sacrifice them, isolated their hearts, measured the action potentials. I mean, because that's the first lesson in physiology. Action potentials is something, the way the body communicates an external stimulus through the axon to the brain. There's something that happens at a receptor level. In the receptor, this external stimulus gets converted into the electrical energy, and this electrical stimulus is transferred to the brain. The brain reacts. So what I was very sure was that there is a change in each of the Vata, Pitta, Kapha environments. The way body reacts is different. That's why the rishis were mentioning only three types of reactivities. And luckily I got excellent results. My hypothesis got confirmed through these experiments.
So you published something?
I published, yeah. It was in the year 2002. A beautiful article got published.
And if you can, in layman terms.
In layman terms.
What were the conclusions?
The conclusions that in layman terms is the Vata is a hyper-reactive electrophysiological environment. Without going into too deep, too scientific terms, it creates an environment where the tissue reacts very quick. That's a hyper-reactive. The Kapha is a hypo-reactive. So that's why the Kapha systems are very stable. And from this experiment, you can derive that the Kapha systems are sthira. Sthira is stable. And sthira is one of the attributes mentioned by the rishis for Kapha. This experiment exactly, you know, helps us to exactly correlate what is told by the rishis.
Confirm
that.
Through experiments.
First time ever in the world this experiment was done, Vata Pitta Kapha models were created, and then I demonstrated it electrophysiologically. There is a difference. The Pitta reactivity is a normal reactivity, and then we compared it. It's a beautiful experiment. It's all published.
Okay.
And then I was thinking all the while, because I had been conducting these experiments again and again to verify, because
so all this is in Russia.
It was all done in Russia. And then all the while I was thinking, you know, I always wanted to become a heart surgeon. But it's not able to spend as much time as is required because of these experiments. And then there was no money. I had to earn money as well.
Yes.
I was earning money. Luckily, Russians came in as a blessing in disguise for me. Because Russians are very, very experimentative.
Yes.
And the moment you say you're from India, they'll love you. The moment you say you're using principles of Ayurveda, they'll just, you know, they'll give their bodies away to you to experiment. And luckily, what I did, on one hand, I was doing these experiments. All these experiments needed money. On the other hand, I opened my own clinic, a small clinic. You know, what I did was, it was about 1/10 of the size of the studio. And then that was being offered for 2,000 a month. I said, okay, I'll pay you 4,000. But I'll pay you per hour basis. So that was coming to just about $25 an hour.
Okay.
I used to charge my patients $100 for my consultation, $75 in net profit. I used to put back in the research. I mean, so I had to manage all this.
Yes.
I saw some of his family management things, so I started doing these things.
Yes.
So then, it grew very well, and then, but all the while I had this thing, you know, I always wanted to become a cardiac surgeon, and then I was not able to spend as much time, because I knew if I were in cardiac surgery, I would have become something like a Denton Cooley or a, you know, Gibbon or one of the greatest cardiac surgeons. But then I just took this bold decision, one decision I thought. I said to myself, see, in Bhagavad Gita again explains this, Lord Krishna in the second chapter beautifully explains this, Hatvava prapsis sargam, jitvava mokshase mahim. If you die in this war, you will get swargam. If you die, you will get swargam, minimum. If you win, you will get moksham, he says. I said, okay, for me also like this. I said, okay, if I become nothing in the whole life doing this, I'm at least always with Vedas.
Yes.
I'm with God.
And if I succeed, I'll become the richest man in the world. And then again, moksha is always there. Swami is always going. So I took that bold decision. I never regretted. I
said, always swargam or moksha, both are there.
By God's grace. See, that's, I mean, again, the reference from Bhagavad Gita helped me to take this decision. So what I did was then I was working with, there's some relevance to what Swami said here.
Yeah.
I was working with, because the pitta systems looked very interesting to me. Then I picked up the pitta systems. Because the pitta systems were not reacting either to adrenaline or acetylcholine, which means they were beyond the sukha dukkha samikrita labha labho jayajo kind of concepts. You know, they were beyond the sukha dukkha labha labho. Because they were not reacting either to adrenaline or acetylcholine. And but still they were reacting the way they should react like the normal cells. So I said, there's something interesting because no one has done any work on these systems. I mean, in the university we were working with stem cells. It was 2004, 2005 was the time when people around the world were working with stem cells. And our institute published a report that the conclusion of which was that they were able to reverse, when they were injecting stem cells, the heart cells, heart stem cells, they were able to reverse the disease, but then the situation got reverted after 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the disease got back, they got back the disease again.
Okay.
So the similar results were published across the world. And then, interesting thing was that we did Panchakarma. There's a concept called Panchakarma in Ayurveda. Panchakarma is you do 5 types of cleansing procedures in the patient and the patient gets detoxified and then he becomes rejuvenated. We tested this in for one of our patients and then his blood vessels got totally cured. I mean, there was no block in this particular patient. He was walking as normal as he was walking about 10 years ago with the heart disease. And then we did an angiogram and found no blocks at all. It was kind of a miracle for me. I said, well, this must be just one such case, I thought. And another thing that I started reading was, more and more literature started coming, that the scientists across the world were able to find stem cells literally everywhere in the body.
Everywhere?
Everywhere. They're present everywhere. And I said, if the stem cells are present everywhere in the body, why are they not actively getting recruited in the site of injury, tissue injury, and getting proliferated? They're not repairing the tissue. Because these stem cells were found even in those patients that had heart attacks. But the stem cells were not actively dividing to replace the dead tissue or replace the injured tissue. Then I realized one thing that Swami mentioned in the Varenda. Swami mentioned, there was one patient whom we wanted to do a CABG, bypass graft surgery. So I said, you surgeons, you always want to cut the heart and then you know put your graft. But I have not created the world like this, he said. That's in direct, in his own. He took the role of the creator. He said, I have not created the world like this, the universe. The solution lies right next to the problem. That's how I created the world, he said.
Mm-hmm.
Number one. And number two is that it's only when there are vices that this solution is not able to cure the problem.
Mm.
I totally decoded this. Because when we were doing Panchakarma, the patient got totally rejuvenated.
Yes.
Which means the vices, the kama, krodha, adi, arisha, dvargas, when a person is afflicted by this, he automatically creates certain toxins in the body.
Damages.
And these toxins, no, they're not damaging.
Yeah.
These toxins are binding the stem cells that are present in the body. So the stem cells are those cells that are present naturally in the body. You don't have to inject them. They're present in the
body. You're restoring the curative potential of the body.
Of the body itself. What you have to do is, being free of vices, you're helping the stem cells be active, always. So that's why the yogis can live as long as they want to live. I'm talking just about the physical body. When there is no vices, the stem cells are active and then they get recruited into the site of injury and then they get, they repair the tissue injury.
The body is a completely self-correcting mechanism.
Absolutely. Yes. So, this is what I demonstrated for the first time in the world, 2008.
And following this procedure, you've been able to find cures for cancers and for so many other
diseases. For many, many diseases. For heart, I started with heart.
Yes.
And then I demonstrated for the first time in the world, subtotal regeneration of the heart tissue in a post-MI. You know, after we induced MIs, heart attacks, into animals, and then applying my methodology, regenerated the heart. Wow. Never happened before by not injecting stem cells, but by helping the body migrate the stem cells to the site of injury.
So basically just supporting the body to cure itself.
Absolutely. This is the power of Ayurveda. And by God, Swami's
power
grace,
of God in the human body.
Absolutely.
The human body is like a divine being.
It is. It is. It is divine being. So that's why Swami always refers to us as Divyatma Swarupala, he says, and we truly are.
I think the more you look at the human body, the more you'll be in awe at the creation of the divine.
Absolutely, yeah. Every scripture, you look at the Bible, it says, God created you
exactly the way he is. That's what Bible says. I mean, every scripture that I found reference to that.
Wonderful.
So with this, we just conclude possibly that by Swami's grace, allergy is no problem, asthma is no problem, arthritis, majority of the patients got better.
Yeah.
Heart, by Swami's grace, very good results we have. With all because of Ayurveda. So putting properly these, connecting these dots. Cancer, I had had some great success with some of the very difficult and terminally ill patients from cancers. Autism, neurological disease. You mentioned
many which are considered incurable.
Incurable, yeah. So, I'm totally convinced.
The body is basically God. It can do anything.
It can do anything. But the body without vices can do anything.
Exactly.
So that's why Kama Krodha Lobha Moha Mada Matsarya should be...
You clean it.
Yeah. You should clean it and then automatically you become God.
Yeah.
So that's why Ayurveda mentions interestingly that Charaka, the greatest sage, Charaka mentions that if you are able to maintain the body in a state of health, which is the Vata Pitta Kapha should be in a state of balance at in each of the cell of a tissue, in each of the tissue of an organ, in each of the organ system, in each of the organ system, the body and the body as a whole, if you are able to maintain that balance for 12 years consecutively, you will get moksha.
Wow.
So Ayurveda is not just about curing body, but it's guiding the spirit.
It's a Veda, it's a spiritual
guidance. Every Veda deals only with moksha. The ultimate target, you go to God.
Go to God. Fantastic. I mean, so it's really wonderful. When you were mentioning about Vata Pitta Kapha, what came to my mind is the International Cardiac Conference, which was held in 93 and 94 here.
Okay.
Though it was a cardiology conference, cardiac surgery conference, and Swami gave the valedictory and the inaugural discourses. And in all those discourses, Swami was talking about Vata Pitta Kapha.
Okay.
It was a sort of a modern medicine audience, and you had international cardiology experts and cardiac surgeons from all over the world, but Swami was insistent and continuously talking about Ayurveda and these concepts. So definitely there is so much more.
Definitely,
I mean, it is the basis for all other kind of medicine that we see in the world.
Sure.
In some ways, it is
definitely
that
root. And then you can come up with novel mechanisms and novel methods of treatment. Because my question that I had, I said, am I going to die? You know, I'm going to be nowhere. But then Swami made sure that after 4 years, I was invited by the Oxford University to deliver a guest lecture. And then I became a medical advisor for the Speed Wellbeing Trust there in the Green Templeton Medical College. So, jitvava moksha se mahim.
It's all the moksha arswarga.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So, because that's what I say, because there's a problem in the world and then Ayurveda has a solution.
Wonderful, sir. Thank you so much for coming over to the studios. I know you are such a busy man.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this by Swami's blessings. I know we've done very little of what you can share, but I really pray to Swami that we get more opportunities to sit down like this and share with people about our great culture and how I really want you to share more about how we can preserve this body, you know, how we can maintain this body so that this body becomes a fit instrument to be an instrument of God. Ultimately, to have to reach God, you have to do it through the body.
Sure.
And if you know how to maintain the body according to ancient culture, according to the ways Bhagwan has told us, you with your knowledge and experience have been able to decode many things, you know, make it more simple for us and give us, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 things, you know, that becomes very easy for people.
Sure.
So maybe in future discussion sessions, maybe we'll go more in detail.
Practical Ayurveda.
Yeah, so that which people can, you know, practice in their daily life,
sure,
and so that they help them to be fitter, healthier instruments. As Vivekananda said, you have to have nerves of steel.
Sure.
Only then we can be messengers of Swami like Hanuman.
Sure.
Thank you so much for coming to the studio.
Thank you very much.
Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Science Thursday Live.
Radio Science Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, dear sisters and brothers, welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. We are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India on the 13th of March 2014. The time right now in the Prashanthi Digital Studios is 14 minutes after 10 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time, of course. I wonder what time is it in your country right now if you are a Radio Sai listener outside of India. Come on, dear listeners, share notes with us. Let's exchange time zone notes and do send us your feedback to this interview. And make sure you mention what date and time you heard this episode on Morning Glory in your location. That would be something really very cool to know. Now, before I play for you part 3 of this much-awaited in-house Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories interview with Mr. Kawasaki, KVSK Ganesh of Radio Sai Global Harmony, I need you to contemplate upon a divine message that God has for you today. So please, take a moment to pause and open your heart and receive this affirmation that Bhagwan Baba wants you to contemplate upon today. Baba says, this world is his play. His, of course, in this case refers to Baba himself, so I'll read again. This world is his play. It is not an empty dream. It has a purpose and use. The play is his. The role is his gift. The lines are written by him. He directs. He decides the dress and decoration, the gesture and the tone, the entrance and the exit. You have to act well the part he has assigned you and receive his approbation when the curtain falls. Earn by your efficiency and enthusiasm the right to play higher and higher roles. That is the meaning and purpose of life. Do not worry about anything. Place yourself fully at his disposal. He knows. He has written the play. He knows how it will end and when and how it will go on. Yours is but to act and retire. The Lord alone is aware of the play, for his is the plan. You see only the part of the play on the stage, so it is very confusing for you. When the entire story is unfolded, then you will appreciate his plan. Not until then. For that, you will have to get behind the screen of Maya and contact the director himself. While you are an actor on the stage reciting your role, you cannot grasp the inner meaning of the entire play, which has the world as its stage and ages as the duration. You are mere actors on the stage, before the footlights. The director who knows the play, who assigns the roles, who gives the cues, who calls you in and puts you on, he is behind the curtain. You are a puppet. He holds the strings. You are only working out his plan. Identification with the adventure in the play and with the success or failure is pointless. Unquote. Elsewhere, Baba says, if God is a flower, you should feel yourself a bee that sucks his honey. If he is a tree, be a creeper that clings to it. If he is the sky, be a tiny star that twinkles in it. So beautiful, isn't it? So dear brothers and sisters, the avatar has so easily demystified the confusion in our lives. We are just puppets. He is the grand puppeteer. Let's just try to be good and obedient puppets and trust his master plan, which is his to execute. It's his privilege. You can't take it away from him. Only he can decide which string to pull and when. On that note, let us now hear from his chosen puppet, my colleague and my brother, Mr. KVSK Ganesh of Radio Sai. Here then is part 3 of this in-house Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, where Ganesh shares stories of how the Divine Lord Sai Nataraja choreographed many a dance step through his students and his son, Ganesh the Ninja. Enjoy. And again, keep in mind, it takes me a few seconds to get on to the right file. Ganesh, I understand you even picked a fight with Swami regarding coming to the hostel.
Yeah.
What was that about?
This was one of the 2004-2005 year. And it was during the month of February-March when boys usually invite Swami for coming to the hostel. So in the process, as through the whole year Swami was speaking to me, our batchmates picked me up for taking the card and asking Swami. So I told, okay, fine. So myself and one more brother, both of us took the card. We were sitting in the front row. So that happened to be a gratitude program day for the primary school children. So the 12th class girls were performing the gratitude program. And Swami was sitting on the boys' side. So I had a small letter with me. During the program, Swami called me. He told, "Will you dance for me?" In the letter, I mentioned it that, "Swami, boys are all praying for you to come to the hostel. It has been so long." Swami told, "I will come. But you dance and take me." So fine. This was something special because whenever Swami comes to the hostel, there will be a big procession of Vedam, band boys and all those. The big procession. I thought, okay, I have to dance before Swami when he comes into the hostel. That was what struck me immediately. So I went back and sat. Then the program of the primary school girls started. So as their program was going on, they started singing, Kanula Mundara Kadaliyade.
Kanula Mundara Kadaliyade. Karuna Rupa Munivu.
Then Swami looked towards me and he just lifted his eyebrow, right eyebrow, like that. And usually when Swami speaks to you, you should be in tune with him and you should pick up whatever indication he gives. So I was enjoying what Swami was doing and I smiled at him and I didn't respond to what he was trying to tell me. Then that song got over. Two more songs the girls sang. After that, the girls started singing Satya Dharma Mo Shanti Premalatoni Nitya Jeevana Yatra Saginchu.
Satya Dharma Mo Shanti Premalatoni Nitya Jeevana Yatra Saginchu. Jeeva Satya Dharma.
Again Swami looked towards me and again raised an eyebrow. At least this time I should have understood what he was trying to indicate to me. The same smile on my face and then the same response from Swami. He looked away from me and started enjoying the program. That was done for that day. After 2 days, it was our chance to take a very big card to Swami. And we were sitting right in front of Swami's throne in the bhajan hall. So myself and one more boy. And the brother who was coming along with me, he didn't know Telugu. So we happened to sit with the card like this. So as soon as Swami finished his interview, he came and sat on the throne. The bhajans were going on and Swami indicated to get the card. So both of us went to show the card to Swami. Swami saw the card and sent that boy back. So I was holding the card alone and Swami asked me, "Why do you ask me to come to the hostel? When I ask you to dance, you don't dance. That is why I won't come to your hostel." And he looked away from me and looked outside the bhajan hall. And this boy didn't know what happened. Because Swami was speaking in Telugu and he was quite far. So, helplessly I came back and sat. And Swami was not at all looking towards me during the bhajan session.
How did you take it?
So, I was feeling bad. So,
but did you figure out that what he was referring to when I asked you to dance?
Huh.
Then it clicked?
It immediately struck me. Those expressions are
indications clear
in my mind. Yes. So, I tried to explain Swami. "Swami, I thought I have to accompany you while you come to the hostel." "No, when I told you to dance, you didn't dance." So, thing is, there is a very big lesson. Whenever Swami tells you to do anything, do it immediately. You should not have a second thought. So, I came back and sat, feeling very bad. After the bhajans, the boy next to me tried to ask me something. I didn't speak to anyone. I just went back to the hostel. I didn't even have the dinner. I just took the Vandana book and went to the music college and I started practicing for all the songs in the Vandana book, which usually boys sing before Swami. The Kanula Mundara, whatever those girls had sung.
Satya Dharma Shanti.
Satya Dharma Mushanti Premalato, Chinni Krishna Murali Dhara. Some 8-9 songs I continuously practiced throughout the night. I didn't have even my dinner. So I came back and slept. I thought, tomorrow at any cost, Swami has to see my dance. I have practiced the entire night. Morning I didn't go for the college. I kept practicing. I had only water during the entire day. So, I had the opportunity to go early to Mandir. So I had written a letter. "Swami, I want to dance in front of you today at any cost. You have to give the permission to me." That I had a deal with Swami. So, Swami was coming in the golf car those days. During the Vedam chanting, Swami happened to come for darshan. I was in the first line. Swami, while going, he was obviously, the previous day's effect was still there. Swami was trying to look away from me. Then I got up on my knees and I gave the letter to Swami. Reluctantly, Swami took the letter and he went inside. I thought, wherever Swami goes today, I have to be behind him, catch him, and I have to dance today. That was the only goal in my mind. So when Swami went for the interview, I thought Swami will go inside for the bhajans after the interview. So as soon as Vedam got over, I ran inside the bhajan hall, sat in the last row, thinking that Swami may come for a round.
Or enter from the back door also.
Back door.
Yeah.
So as soon as I entered bhajan hall, Swami started coming outside. He used to give sessions to the boys, he used to speak to the boys. So he came and sat outside. So helplessly, I was stuck there in the bhajan hall. So slowly, I managed to come, crawling, and sat right behind in the third block where the college boys sit, in the end, last row. Then Swami, in his own way, he called our warden, Sir Shivashankar Sai, sir, and he asked so mischievously, is there any boy who can dance here? Because these were the words which warden, sir, had told me after the program. Usually I sit in the Vedam block, which is very close to Swami's view. So
that day you were missing of all the days.
So warden sir was trying to check for me in the Vedam block. I was not there. But from Swami's lip movements, I could make out that Swami was asking for me. Because at that point of time, you won't have anything else in mind. So slowly I started moving forward and warden sir was sending word through everybody to search for me. So suddenly when warden sir was coming back, he pointed out towards me and told, come, Swami is calling you. So I got up from there and I was coming towards Swami. Swami, now also he reluctantly, kucho,
sit.
So I just sat in the first row. Again, Swami called warden sir, can this boy dance? Then warden sir told Swami, you only call him and ask. So Swami called me. And I told Swami, I am very sorry for what I had done. So now I want to dance in front of you. And then Swami indicated, start. There was no accompaniment. There was no song. There was no CD.
No costume. You were wearing white and white.
White and white. That's
shirt
too, white
pant.
Safari.
White safari.
White safari.
Quite a sight. Yes. It must have been.
And Swami told, start dance.
And bhajan was going on.
Bhajan was going on. Luckily, bhajan boys were, Sailesh sir and some of the bhajan group boys were sitting outside. And to my utter amazement, they were right behind me. So immediately, those days, boys used to carry their Vandana books to Mandir. So I indicated to get one of the Vandana books. I marked, this was happening right in front of Swami. And Swami was so eagerly waiting in all his mercy. Then I pointed what all songs to be sung. Then I handed over the book to Shailesh sir and he started harmonium and boys started singing. It was like a impromptu performance and boys were singing and we didn't even practice the coordination aspect. So everything was just coming out like that, spontaneous
flow of creativity.
Yes. And then after three songs, Swami was very happy.
Which songs did you dance to, Ganesh?
The same songs which Swami had
asked you initially. Asked,
yes. And then after these songs, Swami called me and told, is there anybody who can dance along with you? Then I remembered that one of the primary school boys who was that time studying in his MBA, he was a very good dancer. From his childhood he had been dancing. So I called him. I told Swami, this boy also dances well. Swami told, okay, both of you dance.
In front of the whole audience without any practice.
No practice.
No costume, nothing.
No costume. And I still remember the song, Chinni Krishna Murali Dhara, the song which Swami had composed.
Chinni Krishna Murali Dhara, Venna Chora Nuga Vara.
It's about little Krishna, baby Krishna.
And then, on the spot, both of us were sitting in front of Swami, discussing, see, you have to do this step now, you have to do this step next. And we turned towards the bhajan boys and told, see, you sing like this, give gap like this. Everything happened in the span of 5 minutes. And we stood up and we performed. And the next moment, Swami called both of us and told, see, now both of you are dancing. It looks so good. Next time when you do, the entire hall should be full. Means, Swami expects everything incomplete. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate. Means the fullness which Swami expects from each one of us is to the highest level. Then started the Prashanti dance group. This was a sapling, a seed sown for the...
By the Lord Himself.
Yes.
And that's why the group is doing so well. We saw such a beautiful and moving performance during the 88th birthday anniversary celebrations. I think the celebrations began with the Prashanti dance group making a lovely offering that people enjoyed. We have had fantastic feedback from our viewers because it was part of the live webcast on Radio Sai and thousands of eyeballs were glued to it even as it was happening live and the hall was full.
Yes.
His words came to fruition.
And the most beautiful part is around 85 boys participated in that particular program and the stage was full with the participants and the hall was full.
Beautiful. And this saga of divine grace through 2004-2005 continued. And you had a special moment in March, twice actually, March 6th as well as March 7th. What happened? Tell us.
Actually, a day prior to March 6th, during the Vedam time, Swami had called me and asked me about the boys who were practicing for dance. Then I told Swami, Swami, we are preparing for a few songs. Whenever you give permission, we are ready to do. So then, this was actually immediately after the incident which happened.
After the impromptu dance.
Then Swami called me and told, tomorrow you prepare a dance and come. It was a Sunday morning when all the primary school students were there and all five of us practiced for a few songs. And then Swami came in the morning for darshan. As he sat outside in his throne, Swami indicated to start the program. So Swami was so lovingly asking, where are your cassettes? So now we moved over from cassettes to CDs. Then we had to get the CD and show to Swami and I told Swami, now cassettes are outdated, Swami. Now we use only CDs to keep the songs, store the songs. Okay, then start the program. So we started the program. After our practiced lot was over, we were tired and we were sitting right in front of Swami. Then Swami called me and told, will you dance alone? Till then we were performing as a group. Then I told Swami, yes Swami, whatever you ask for, we'll do. Then he told, will you dance for Vedam?
Hmm.
And every moment it was a challenge for me.
Hmm.
Then I told Swami, which Vedam do you want?
Hmm.
He told, anything. You dance for Vedam. Immediately I had to rush to the Vedam group which was sitting near the pillar. And then I happened to ask Vedanarayan sir and our sirs there, sir, which one would be preferable? Then they told, you only select because you only have to dance there. Then I told, sir, you chant Narayana Suktam very slowly. I will do the depiction part.
Wow. And such an unusual dance sequence. I've never heard of people dancing to Vedam.
Yeah. So this was the starting. Then I told Swami, Swami, I'll dance for Narayana Suktam. Swami told, start.
Wow.
Then they started chanting, Dhata purastadya muda jahara, Chakra pravidvan prati shaschatasraha.
Chakra pravidvan prati shaschatasraha. Tamevam vidvan.
I don't know what happened to me. I don't know how I did it. Because the entire shlokam meaning I had not known, to be frank. So whatever was coming to my mind, like Swami tells, educare. Whatever is within you,
it just comes out.
Yes, that was what was happening there.
It was just on the spot you were choreographing. It was happening.
Yes.
Well, you were in the divine presence, so you were plugged to some higher consciousness.
Yes. And the entire Narayana Suktam was over. And then Swami called me and told, very nice. And he materialized a green diamond ring for me. So that was the thing which...
I don't see it on your hand right now.
Yeah, actually I lost it.
Oh, good for you, Ganesh.
Yeah.
You lost the green ring. How did you manage to do that?
It was during Ganesh Chaturthi of 2005 when I was in my first MBA. One day before the Ganesh immersion, all of us as a class went to the Chitravati, checked whether enough water is there. And usually we were taken out to play for some time during those days. So it was one fine day when we went, one unfortunate day for me. All our classmates were playing catches with the tennis ball. So it was my turn. When I got the ball, I was there right in the middle of water. I didn't know how to swim. And the water also was not quite deep. So when I got the ball, I tried to throw it to the other person. As I was throwing, I could see the ring going out of my finger.
Flying out
along with the ball.
Uh-huh.
And then it just landed right in front of my eyes in the water.
But then you couldn't find it.
And the entire group of boys tried to search for it.
Maybe its time was over just went back to the holy waters.
Yeah, and boys tried to search for it. And I tried to tell Swami. For the next 2-3 days, I wrote letters to Swami and Swami always ignored that. And it was during the convocation drama of 2005 that we were dancing as a group. And Swami used to interact with the boys after the rehearsal. So Swami was sitting in the D, in the center of the D. And towards his right was Narasimhamurthy sir explaining to him the entire concept of the drama and how the rehearsals are going on. And to his left was former Vice Chancellor. So all the who's who were there around Swami. I was sitting somewhere in the end of the D. And then...
What is the D? The pit in front of the stage.
The pit in front of the stage. Okay, okay. In the Purnachandra Auditorium.
Right.
And then Swami looked towards me and I was there in the end. Swami called me. So I came front. I just knelt down before Swami and I had never expected this to happen. Swami asked me, "How are you?"
What a nice question to have from the Lord of the universe.
I told Swami, "I'm fine." And then I was folding my hands like this. I was quite close to Swami. And then Swami caught hold of my hand, my folded palms. And then he was pressing it and he checked in my left hand. The ring was missing. In my right hand, it was not there. And then Swami slowly asked me, "Where is it?" Obviously now I had to tell the right answer. So, as elders were there beside Swami, I didn't dare to tell it loudly. So I went close to Swami's ear and told Swami, "All of our classmates went to Chitravati for playing before Ganesh Chaturthi immersion. While throwing the ball, it flew from my finger and it fell in water. I lost it, Swami." And Swami usually, when you lose something precious, Swami becomes quite furious with you. But the expression which Swami gave was like, it stunned me. So as soon as I told Swami I lost it, Swami, the expression was...
Oh, he broke into a laugh.
He tried to control his laughter because elders were there and he also didn't express his... He didn't give a complete expression there. Kurcha.
Sit down.
So that was the end of it and that was how Swami reacted for what I told to him.
Now, after losing the green ring, you did well for yourself. You have a Navratna ring. How did that come on the finger?
Yeah, this was sometime during my first year of MBA. It was in March 2006. Vedam was going on and I happened to sit in the Vedam block. Swami came for darshan. After his regular interview, he came out and sat to interact with the boys. The Vedam was going on in full swing. Suddenly Swami called one of the Vedam teachers and asked, "Who is first in Vedam?" And then he was surprised. Like suddenly Swami asked this question. "Swami, everybody chants well," the answer which that sir gave. Swami told, "Not everybody. Tell me one name." "Swami, you only test for yourself." That was the answer which that
I'm
sir...
I'm sure he was very nervous picking a person.
He was very intelligent.
Good answer. Pick yourself.
So then, no. Tell me one boy's name. The sir came back and he was talking to the group. "Swami is asking me, who is first in Vedam? Whose name should I tell?" Then for me personally, from the first year of joining in the college, I started learning Vedam. And so many times I got first in Veda competition. So I tried to tell sir, 3-4 times I had got first in Vedam competition.
That is the hostel
meet.
Or the college?
During the sports and cultural meet.
I see.
"So can I lift my hand?" Then sir told, "Wait." Because there were some boys in the Vedam group whom Swami used to talk with a lot. So they had suggested their names. Immediately our warden came into picture and he asked that, "Sir, ask all the senior Vedam teachers to come and sit in front." So we were almost 6 teachers who were teaching the students in Vedam in the hostel. So then...
So from within the student body, you were within the student body.
Yes. We were senior students teaching the juniors. So 6 of us were asked to come in front. And I was holding a letter that day. all six of us were sitting front. The sir went back to Swami again and told, Swami, six boys are there who teach Vedam to the juniors. They all chant well. Even then, Swami was very insistent that only one name had to be told. So, the teacher was helpless and again he came back to us and told, see, Swami is asking only for one name. What should I do? Then we told, sir, you ask Swami to pick up one boy. The final time when sir went to Swami, Swami looked at all of us. I was holding a letter. Swami asked that, sir, does that dancer chant Vedam? Then the sir was taken aback because just then I had told him that, sir, I had got some prizes during sports meet. Can I lift my hand? So then sir answered to Swami that, Swami, he chants Vedam, Swami. Call him. So I went to Swami and in front of that sir, he was asking me, do you know Vedam? Yes, Swami. Do you chant it at home? Yes, Swami. I chant it at home also. Then as that sir was seeing, Swami asked me, is your Upanayanam done?
The sacred thread.
Sacred thread ceremony. I told Swami, you only got it done. It was during year 2001, if I'm not wrong, that Swami had conducted a mass Upanayanam ceremony, wherein we all got blessed by Swami. So, yes, Swami, my Upanayanam is over. You only performed my Upanayanam. And Swami told, very good. And then he waved his hand and he created a Navaratna ring for me.
Nine gems.
What I'm wearing right
now. So three rows of three gems each.
Yes.
And I understand each represents a planet of nine planets.
Yes. It's like now I understand why Swami had given me this for. It's like a huge responsibility on my shoulders. Because now we have to take care of the Vedam group. Every morning we go for Vedam. And as much as possible I try to be first to sit in the Vedam block. That is what I try to do every moment. This is a big responsibility for us.
It is, and the ring is a constant reminder.
Yes.
And also such a source of blessing.
Yes. And Swami told, never remove this ring.
I notice you have another band in front of it to prevent it from slipping.
Yes, Swami.
Lest you go playing ball again at Chitravati, you have to be careful now.
I continue to play, but without removing this.
Because you've kept a stopper in front of it. Good, good, sensible idea. It won't slip out. Oh, so much of blessings, so many blessings, beautiful. And it's very nice that after receiving so many blessings, you're still awake to your responsibilities, Ganesh. That's very admirable, I must say.
Yes.
But in March, when you had performed this dance to the Narayan Suktam impromptu, this green ring was not the only thing he gave you. 2 days later, you had another blessing.
It was not even 2 days later, the next day. March 8th was supposed to be Shivratri Day. And March 7th, all the Vrindavan boys were coming to have Swami's darshan for Shivratri. So Swami sent word through the warden to all the dance boys that they have to come prepared in the evening. Now we had to plan for a different set of songs. And every day was a challenge for us because Swami wants everything new and everything fresh. So that entire afternoon, the college people gave us off so that we can prepare for the program. So we had prepared an entire sequence of numbers, dance numbers, and we came to the darshan hall. Swami sat, he started the program. After the entire program got over, again the same question, will you dance alone? Yes, Swami. Then I started this song, Bho Shambho Shiva Shambho Swayambho.
Shiva Shambho Swayambho. Bho Shambho Shiva Shambho Swayambho. Bho Shambho Shiva Shambho Swayambho.
Because it was close to Shivratri. So the brother who was singing the song was having so much of feeling in the song. So this was also an impromptu dance. Because I knew the song before, it just came out. And the last part of the song is Shiva Shambho Swayambho, Shiva Shambho Swayambho. It goes into an alap.
Shiva Shambho Swayambho, Shiva Shambho Swayambho.
So, the last step what I was doing was, I was rotating on my knees.
Oh, I see.
In a circular way.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I was doing that, Swami immediately called me halfway through the rotation. Swami called me and he materialized a beautiful chain for me and he gave it to me, blessed me with it.
Chain with the locket?
With Swami's locket on it.
It has Swami's bust.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
So this was the third creation which Swami had.
So March of 2005 was so special for
yes,
you.
Yes, yes, very much.
Now, you had the great fortune of traveling many times with Swami. I can think of four phenomenal trips with Bhagwan, three to Kodaikanal and one to Hadshi, where Swami also went to Mumbai. Tell us about that. How did you get selected? What is it like to travel with God in physical form and to be part of His travel entourage? This is like one magical world we know so little about.
Any student's dream after joining this institute will be surely to go along with Swami. And in my second year post-graduation, I heard of Swami going to Kodaikanal because there was a long gap. After 99, Swami had gone only in 2003. So that time I was not knowing about this trip. So I never stayed back for vacation because people who stay in vacation usually get this opportunity. This was in the year 2005. So I was praying to Swami that Swami should take me along with him to Kodai.
Did you write those letters?
No. I never mentioned this in my letters.
I just prayed in your heart.
Prayed that I have to be with Swami. That is the only prayer I had. I want to be with you. So it was summer vacation, and much before the vacation, around 15 days, Swami had never spoken to me. It was like a dull period for me because Swami was not looking at me. Obviously, some churning must be going on inside me to make me learn some lessons. Those 15 days, the heat of selection of this Kodai trip was going on. And I never felt that I will be a part of this trip because Swami was not looking at me as Swami was speaking to other boys. Then one fine afternoon, one of our sirs had called a group of boys inside the dispensary room. I still remember that room.
In the hostel?
In the hostel.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously when so many boys are waiting, it won't be nice to
reveal
to everybody.
Yeah.
So they called us. And as soon as that sir told us that, see boys, you are blessed by Swami to be as a part of Swami's Kodai trip. That sentence itself was such a, it gave me so much of joy when I heard that I was a part of Swami's group. Then obviously I was so thrilled. Luckily at that point of time my parents were here. So they felt very happy that I was given an opportunity to go along with Swami. The first trip was in 2005. First time I traveled with Swami. Before going to this Kodaikanal trip, Swami had given us three interviews. One in the interview room and two in the bhajan hall.
This was for the group that was going to travel.
Yes. So three interviews before the actual journey. And Swami was telling us in so much of detail how to pack your luggage, how to tie ribbons to your luggage, how to mark your luggage. And so many details that Swami was going into. See boys, you are going on a very big trip. You have to arrange all your luggage properly. And just like a mother and father who takes care, who is going to take you for a summer trip. It was just that kind of feeling which we were having. And two times he called us. It was really a blessing for us to be with him. And the first time we entered the flight, and all these days Swami was not speaking to me. He was not even looking at me. Even in these three interviews.
Oh, but he had marked your name for the list.
Everything was going on in silence.
Oh, I see.
He had something in store for me.
Let me narrate to you an episode. Our room leader was Kote, sir. I asked him, is it compulsory to go for darshan?
Oh my God.
I had the nerve to ask him that.
I think it's a very sea change when you become a Sai student. Because it's only when I joined the Satya Sai College, I discovered that this God is not a photograph on the wall, and He's not something so distant. It's something very, very near you.
And this was lovely, because there you had on the gymnastic bench, the student on one side, Swami on the other side, locked in battle. Again, it was arm wrestling with Swami. With Swami.
And having been given the divine golden opportunity to have studied in His institutions and directly experienced His love, then we have to really live our lives to reflect His teachings.
Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories is our weekly radio series in which we bring you conversations with the former students of Bhagwan Baba's schools and colleges. You can also listen to this on Asia's stream of Radio Sai on the Morning Glory segment of Thursday Live, which starts at 9:40 a.m. To know more about the timings of this weekly series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on other streams of Radio Sai, please go to the schedule page of our website, radiosai.org. You can also download and listen to this at your leisure by visiting the link radiosai.org/sai-students. That is radiosai/SAISTUDENTS. Thank you and happy listening. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, and thank you for staying with us on Morning Glory on March the 13th, 2014. I hope you enjoyed part 3 of the Fleeting Moments interview with Brother KVSK Ganesh of Radio Sai. You heard him whet your appetite about Swami having something special in store for him. Dear listeners, I insist that you tune in next week to listen to what it was. These are details that are coming into the public domain for the very first time. So please don't miss part 4 next week right here on Morning Glory. As the legendary Steve Jobs advised us to stay hungry, so let's stay hungry for these stories that you will hear coming to you via Ganesh of Radio Sai next week. Meanwhile, we eagerly look forward to your feedback to both the interviews that were played on Morning Glory today. The first was a tryst with divinity with Dr. Ravi Shankar Pauli Shetty. The second was a Fleeting Moments interview with Radio Sai's very own KVSK Ganesh. We will continue this conversation with Ganesh over the next few Thursdays right here on Morning Glory. Please share your feedback by email. You can reach us at listener@radiosai.org. May I also remind you that you can catch most of the content of Morning Glory and all various segments of Thursday Live on our Facebook page and a few days later on our website, radiosai.org, under Thursday Live Archives. By the way, our Facebook page is facebook.com/radiosai. Now, you don't have to be a Facebook user or have a Facebook account holder to access this page. Anybody can go to facebook.com/radiosai and enjoy all the postings on our Facebook page. It is now time for me to offer Morning Glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet and thank you very much for your company. As I bid you Sai Ram, I'd like to treat you to the voice of my most favorite singer in the whole wide world. Incidentally, my favorite singer is also the voice that the rishis or the spiritual scientists of ancient India heard and transcribed thousands of years ago. And today, those notes that they transcribed are known as the Vedas. Over now to Bhajan Bliss in the voice of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. And just so you know, Bhajan Bliss is available as a Sai Blossom product that you can order online with the click of a mouse. So dear listeners, it's time to bliss out with the divine melody of God incarnate, the Kali Yuga avatar, the love of our lives, Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Jai Sai Ram.
Vaike Guru, Vaike Guru, Vaike Guru Ji Bolo. Vaike Guru, Vaike Guru, Vaike Guru Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Bolo. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam Ji Bolo. नित्य नित्य जपिए तेरे नाम जी बोलो नित्य नित्य जपिए सत्य नाम सत्य नाम सत्य नाम जी बोलो सत्य नाम सत्य राम 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 जी बोलो बोलो राम 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 जी बोलो Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam ji, bolo Satyanam, Satyanam. Krishna, 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 Krishna ji, bolo Krishna, 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 Krishna. Bol Krishna, 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 Krishna ji, bolo Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Nitya, Nitya japiye Krishna naam ji, bolo Nitya, Nitya japiye. Hari, 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 Hari ji, bolo. Bolo Hari 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 ji bolo Satya Naam Satya Naam Satya Naam ji bolo Satya Naam Satya Naam Satya Naam Satya Naam ji bolo Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Radha Ramana Hari Govinda Jai Jai Govinda Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Govinda Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Govinda Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Bolo Govinda Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Bolo Govind Jai Jai Gopal Jai Jai Radha Ramana Hari Govind Jai Jai Vahe Guru Vahe Guru Vahe Guru Ji Bolo Vahe Guru Vahe Guru Bolo Vahe Guru Vahe Guru Vahe Guru Ji Bolo Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam ji, bolo Satyanam, Satyanam. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam ji, bolo Satyanam, Satyanam. Satyanam, Satyanam, Satyanam
ji. Subramanyam, Subramanyam, Shanmukhanatha, Subramanyam. Subramanyam, Subramanyam, Shanmukhanatha, Subramanyam. Subramanyam, Subramanyam, Shanmukhanatha, Subramanyam. Subramanyam, Subramanyam, Shanmukhanatha, Subramanyam. Shiva 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 Subramanyam Hara 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 Subramanyam Om Shiva 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 Subramanyam Hara 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 Subramanyam Shiva 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 Subramanyam Hara 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 Subramanyam Shiva Shiva Hara Hara Subramanyam Hara Hara Shiva Shiva Subramanyam Shiva Shiva Hara Hara Subramanyam Hara Hara Shiva Shiva Subramanyam 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 Jai Subramanyam Subramanyam Shanmukhanatha Subramanyam 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 Shanmukhanatha Subramanyam Shiva Saravana Bhava Subramanyam Shiva Saravana Bhava Subramanyam Shiva Shiva Hara Hara Subramanyam Hara Hara Shiva Shiva Subramanyam Shiva Shiva Hara Hara Subramanyam Hara Hara Shiva Shiva Subramanyam 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 Om Subramanyam Subramanyam Shanmukhanatha Subramanyam Jai Subramanyam Subramanyam Sarvanata Subramanyam Wom 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 Subramanyam Subramanyam Sarvanata Subramanyam 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 Sarvanata Subramanyam 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 Sarvanata Subramanyam Subramanyam, Subramanyam, Shanmuganatha Subramanyam, 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 Sai